What's going on, guys? Thank you so much for joining me once again. Welcome back to pre-production. Today, I'm talking to filmmakers Matt Bettinelli-Open and Tyler Gillette. They've worked on projects like VHS, Devil's Due, Southbound, Ready or Not, Scream 5, Scream 6, and now Abigail, which comes out on April 19th. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. I'm really excited to talk to you.
I'm from YouTube. You guys had your start kind of in interactive adventures for YouTube back when annotations were still a thing on YouTube and people could, you know, click choose your own adventure. Yeah. I miss choose your own adventure videos. They just don't exist anymore, but it was such a fun aspect of YouTube that you guys got a launching pad from.
Yeah, I mean, that was really the start for us was YouTube. And, you know, we made a few short shorts and then annotations came around and we were always searching for a way to make longer stories. You know, we wanted to make movies and, you know, you keep making these 3-minute shorts and they're really fun. But as soon as the annotations were available, we were like, oh, we can make a 25-minute movie now, you know, a 30-minute thing.
Masquerading as a bunch of shorts.
Yeah, exactly. Pretending to be a bunch of 2-minute segments. And it allowed us to like really design something that felt original and fresh to us that we hadn't really seen in that format before. And I think it also, it really helped us start to understand story and like where, you know, where the plot shifts and how the character has to affect that. And because of the low budgets, you know, no budgets, it forced us to put character first. And it was like, here are our characters and we're going to put them through hell. And, you know, I think you still see that thread today in the stuff we're making, but it really did start for us doing all of that.
Yeah.
That stuff on YouTube.
Were you able to track the views of which videos were chosen the most to be like, okay, so that's the path the audience wanted to take?
Well, it's funny. We could track the views, and there was always, this was like the version of a spoiler with our interactive adventures was always, well, I saw that the view count on video 2 was
the length.
Yeah. Oh, it was length.
Length.
Length, and then, yeah, and then views, because there were certain people would go back. The wins would always get the most views because
everybody,
even if you lost, you had to go through them. So yeah, we could track all the views on that site. It was a really amazing immediate feedback. It was the excitement around like clicking publish on one of those interactive adventures. I feel the like excitement and anxiety of it just thinking back on it.
But to that end, the immediate feedback, we learned really quickly that people would know, oh, the short ones are the death, so I'm going to choose the long one. And then, so the first thing we did was like, well, let's make this next death scene a six-minute long, like, meandering.
They die of dehydration in the middle of the desert.
What did that teach you about audience expectation, or did it teach you anything about sort of how to anticipate what an audience might want out of a story, if you can kind of see, well, they seem to enjoy this path, or maybe they're just watching this one because they know this one's going to be really fucked up and the other one's, you know, a little more tame. What did that make you anticipate about how to tell a story to an audience?
Never getting like too comfortable with any formula. And, you know, I think
always
that
mix it up.
Yeah, that immediate feedback also forced us to challenge our perception of the stories that we were making and also the way that we made them. And it was so valuable to like be given that gift of well, number one, a group of people who I think became fans of our work, but then knowing that we had a sort of core audience, that they expected us to challenge them, expected us to do new things and different things and to surprise them. And part of the fun of designing anything back in those days, and really still to this day, is designing them with the audience in mind and knowing like, oh, we're gonna lead you down this path. And as soon as you start feeling comfortable with what this thing is, we are gonna pull the rug out from under you. And
that's
you're gonna have to get comfortable with a very new idea very quickly.
I think that learning to subvert expectations was one of the things we got more than anything from that, specifically from the interactive adventures, because the entire point of it on some level was, we're gonna lead you into this situation. Now there's clearly a choice here where you should go, but which one are you gonna choose? And then we'd have lots of conversations about, well, what's more fun for us to fuck with the audience, depending on which choice they choose.
Yeah, the one that feels like an obvious win should be a death, or
but
or
not,
is it, or because, are we aware that you think that yeah, we're tricking you,
we
and
know
so you,
yeah, it's Princess Bride. I know that you know that I know that you know it's that. And I think the other thing that we really got from that format too was there the all of those interactive adventures, there is a very simple, clear goal stated explicitly at the beginning. That's like the characters have to reach this place.
Make it to happy hour.
You know, like almost like board game styles. Like they just have, you have to get from A to Z. So that then the audience knows, no matter how crazy the kind of adventure gets and it goes on so many different paths, that they're still just trying to accomplish this one simple thing. I think that helped us keep everything kind of grounded and heading in the right direction, even when it felt like it was getting crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and I can kind of see, you know, a through line throughout the films you guys have both made, in that every filmmaker always tries to subvert expectations in some way, but there's a very real sort of tangible, almost calculable way that you both have achieved it, especially in this film and Ready or Not, where you present a world that is the world that we've come to believe. Like, this is okay, we have a person in case of Ready or Not, we have a person meeting, you know, in-laws. All right, we understand what
right.
this world
exactly.
looks like.
Yeah.
This
very
world's
familiar.
Right. This is a world we all kind of know and live in. And then at some point, whether it's the midpoint or a little before it, it's like, no, we're actually going to tell this version of the story. You like the story I was telling before and you were invested in that story, but now hopefully you like it even more. And of course, without getting into any spoilers, Abigail does that really brilliantly, I think. One of my favorite aspects of it really was sort of the, I wouldn't say cat and mouse, but the intrigue aspect of that first like 40 or so minutes.
Yeah.
What's going on right now? Is it this? Is it this? Is it this? And watching the characters try to figure that out was a lot of fun.
Thank you. That means
yeah, so
a ton that you like that part of the movie. I think for us, the sort of secret to Abigail is making sure that the audience falls in love with all of those characters, even though they're all despicable people. That first 40 minutes is really about nuancing the idea of them being anti-heroes and getting to understand and enjoy the dynamic between that group makes the turn and then what follows the turn so much more interesting and fun. And if you don't have that time to get to know them and to enjoy that dynamic, then the rest of the story just falls flat at the end of the day.
There's also something fun about seeing them under the pressure of, oh, there's this big criminal overlord who, you know, you mess with and now you're in trouble. And I think, you know, us, the audience knows, oh, you've got much bigger problems than that, my friend.
Like, taking a group of seeming experts and like putting them on the wrong path from the start.
I think we get so used to like main characters can't make mistakes. You know, that's like, it. You see it more and more where it's like they have to be infallible. And I think there's something fun about that part of the movie where you get to see them make choices and come to conclusions that you as an audience sort of know is probably wrong. But you understand where they're coming from, so it doesn't make them stupid, but it makes them, they're trying, they're just not hitting the target yet.
Over the course of Abigail, as certain things come, you know, to pass for these characters for the first half, I'm thinking, I kind of have an idea of what's happening right now, they don't, and I'm enjoying the ride of watching them figure it out. And I think one of the more brilliant aspects of the script is you have a group of people who aren't really talking about themselves, they don't even want to use their real names, And yet you have to find a way to endear them to the audience, even though all of them are willing to kidnap a young girl. Granted, our lead character who goes by the name Joey didn't know it was a young girl, but still, that's a hard ask for the script. And it achieves it extremely well in one scene that I thought was just like a brilliant way to handle character exposition, in that you establish Joey as someone who has pretty good intuition for who someone is. And you watch her like go to each character and be like, I think I know who you are. I think I know who you are. I think I know who you are. And she's right. And so we learn about them. I thought that was pretty brilliant.
Thank you. That's one of our favorite scenes in the movie. It feels like that's the scene when the movie kind of casts its spell over the audience. That's the experience that we've had in the screenings, that people, I think, They've shown up for a very specific thing, and then they realize, and it always happens around that scene, they realize that they're actually falling in love with these characters and this ensemble. And that to us was such a pivotal scene in achieving in achieving that very thing, to have people go in and go, oh, wait a minute, this movie is going to do far more than I expected it to do, far more than maybe what I've seen in a trailer. And it was also very oddly and coincidentally the first scene that we shot of the film was that big ensemble scene, and there was a lot of pressure going into that first day of shooting. There always is on any movie, and to see the cast show up and play a scene where the characters in the movie are getting to know each other as our cast is also figuring each other out and how to work in the dynamic of the ensemble. It was just a really amazing moment, and we felt a lot of pressure lift off of our shoulders during the shooting of that scene. We knew that we were, I mean, in the presence of just remarkable actors, and we were so surprised to feel how different all of those characters are within the story.
Kevin Durand, I'm not sure if you've heard this before, but I felt the most empathy for him. There's these handful of moments where characters will poke at him for his supposed lack of intellect. And he kind of lets this side of him be seen where he's like, maybe stop, I might kill you. And I really love those scenes with him.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for saying that, because we feel the same way. I think what Kevin brought to that character is really special. You know, there was a lot of, like, the groundwork was laid in the script, and then Kevin really took it and elevated it to this, there's like a real sadness, you know, you feel it, like in that scene with Joey, when talks about, you know, that his dad probably beat him, and he just kind of takes it, and it's very moving, and it makes you just kind of fall in love with him a little. And then I think one of the things that we found in the screenings is that, and it's probably because of exactly what you're saying, where he's like a brute force, but also there's something very gentle and caring. Everybody wants to laugh when he gives them a moment. You know, we found, we always thought his performance was funny. I don't think we realized that it was going to be as funny as it was with an audience. And we were thrilled the first time we saw people reacting to him.
He's terrific in the movie, as is Alicia Weir, who plays Abigail. So much is required of her. She has to play that sort of innocent child at first with the crocodile tears of, you know, I don't know what's going on, why are you doing this to me? And you have to feel sort of sympathy for her. And then all of a sudden there's this turn where she's not so sympathetic anymore. And she does it all in the physical stuff too. I imagine she probably had to do a lot of physical stuff too, with wires and whatnot.
I mean, she does the majority of the physical stuff. I think that we knew we were asking a lot from her going into the shoot. I don't think we were expecting to get more than what we were asking, and we did every day. There were instances of shooting where, you know, our stunt coordinator would come up to us, and, you know, part a conversation that's always being had on set is, you know, what's the handoff between, you know, an actor and a stunt performer? And there were countless days on this movie when we'd be having that conversation with our stunt coordinator, and he'd say, No, this is all Alicia. Alicia can do all of this stuff. And not only can she do it, she's better than her double, because she has a dance background. And he sort of would list all of these things that Alicia just possesses, you know, through hard work, and some of them just very naturally. But it was really, really profound to watch her not only be great in these, like, very intimate, emotional, vulnerable scenes, but then to also just become an absolute beast when it came to the action stuff. It was just really, really the contrast between those things. And sometimes those things happen in the same day. You know, you show up and you shoot a quiet emotional scene in the morning, and then you come back after lunch and you're running your characters through the house in the middle of a chase. And to see those that switch flip so naturally in her was just really, really fun. We were entertained by her performance every day behind the monitors.
I'm curious, with a film that has such a massive cast, in regards to just, like, you've got a lot of principal characters. Yeah, it's contained, but you still have a lot of schedules to work around, and one of them is a child. And so what is it like to schedule a movie like Abigail, to get everyone on that page where it's like, this is the most efficient way to plan this out, where we can do the action, we can do the blood gags, and we have a young person on set as well?
I mean, we had an incredible team out there, our AD, UPM, line producer, and like the whole team just working really hard to make that work, because that is
such a puzzle.
Fucking puzzle. And, you know, and then throw on top of that, we have two strikes. So there's there's figuring out how to do all that. And so on top of that, it turns out in Ireland, which we didn't know, I mean, we could have looked it up, but it gets dark at about 11 o'clock at night and sunny at like 3:30 in the morning when we were filming.
Wow.
You know, we're shooting a vampire movie and it's basically sunny all the time. So the scheduling on this was like insane, but I think it, at the end of the day, it's just a lot of hard work and a lot of just moving pieces around. And, you know, some of that or majority of that happens with like Ron and Dara and Neve, and they figure out, it's like, how can we have Alicia for this period of time.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do here that's effective in this moment, you know, and really use every moment. I think at the end of the day, we felt the pressure of the time, but yeah. we were never like chasing it. You know, it was really well scheduled.
And if you want to get into like the nitty gritty production stuff, you know, that design starts with our AD and line producer. And then once we have a general sense of like the hours, the amount of time we're going to need to shoot certain sections of the movie, we then can sort of break out Alicia's time on set. Because she also then would have to break to do schooling, you know, every 2 hours.
Well, she had to take a break, just a normal break.
Yeah, a normal break, and then there was a break for school and a lunch break, and we only had her for a total of 8 hours a day, and that included the two hours in the makeup chair. So when she hit set, you know, it was really go time. And so then that conversation about the schedule, it comes down through us, and we have a conversation with our DP about, you know, those bigger scenes, particularly ones that are high page count. You know, there's a scene that I don't know how many pages the cellar scene is, 11 pages, and most of that is Alicia, you know, on camera delivering lines. And we talked a lot about just in terms of like the coverage methodology, being able to obviously start the scene and the sequence on Alicia, cover out as much of that as we could, knowing that, you know, midway through the scene, we're gonna sort of jump to the other side of the line, because we love long talking scenes to feel like they have some visual evolution, even if there's not a lot of camera movements or a lot of, you know, physical blocking moves in the scene. And then, you know, we would know that when Alicia went on break, that the lighting setup that was required to flip around and look the other way was going to be minimal, so that if she went off set for an hour, we would be able to spin around and cover out one, maybe two instances of coverage on you know, our other characters, and then when she was back with us, immediately flip around. So we were turning the world around quite a bit on this movie, and Aaron Morton, our DP, was, I think, just really, we couldn't have asked for anybody better to help achieve that. He's so fast and he's so smart about the way that
really thoughtful.
Yeah, the sort of set, the camera and the set runs. So that was it was a challenge, but it was really fun. It was always a part of the creative process for us, designing how to shoot those days.
Speaking of the DP, I mean, I could have sworn this movie was lit by like old fashioned oil lamps, because everything just looks so orange and warm and really, really beautiful. I just want to compliment you guys on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, he's incredible.
We should say like the look of this movie too, there's very little processing and color done in the DI. I mean, it's, you know, Aaron, and this is something that we've tried to achieve on all of our movies, but that, you know, the LUT that's applied to the dailies, that the show LUT is as close to the version of the movie and how we want it to look as is in our minds. And it takes time. It takes a little more time to achieve that. But at the end of the day, you know, the most of the time that we spend with the movie is in the edit, and you fall in love with your work print, and you want the thing that you fall in love with to be as close to the finished product as possible, and Aaron really achieved that visually for us.
You know, you mentioned work prints, and something that I've sort of dealt with is just the getting married to a temp score, and how sometimes you know, hearing a temp score over and over again, you sort of like, well, can you just like have it be like that, because that just sounds, that's perfect what I've put in here. But then you have to, you know, go through this period where you're sort of divorcing yourself from it. And
yeah, you have to retrain your brain and your ears. Yeah.
You know, this is our fourth movie in a row with Brian Tyler doing the score. And, you know, Brian, he's a fucking literal genius, and he's so good at what he does. And he gets our tone really well and how he can complement it and really make it work the best. And we have this very weird somewhat unique, I think, experience with Brian as our composer, where we hear the suite, we talk about it a lot, you know, we go back and forth, but at the end of the day, Brian kind of delivers us a fully baked score 2 weeks before we're done mixing or something, very towards the end. And I think on this one, maybe more than any of them, it's always been great, but we put that score in, and after like one or two watches, you're like, what did we even have in here before? I don't fucking remember. Like, it just, it washes it away because he does such a complete version that feels so cohesive. Like it's just part of the movie, and you kind of don't know how it wasn't there the whole time.
I think that that's the hard thing too about temping our tone, is that it's a lot of the music that we try, it feels like it's in too specific a lane. And what Brian does is he creates this, like, he writes music for us that feels really traditional and timeless. And it doesn't, it sort of pushes you emotionally in places, but it's only ever really pushing you emotionally. It's not ever really pushing the tone. You know, it's not ever wacky or comedic.
It's actually a little fighting.
Yeah, he's sort of like counter-programming the tone at times. And I think that for us is the reason that our relationship with him has worked is we come out of a temp with a real hodgepodge of music, and they're all great. Our music editors that we've worked with have like been in the trenches cutting temp for us. I mean, that is a hard job, an extremely difficult job.
The dude, Ben Zales on this one, wonderful guy. I mean, he spent 8 months with us doing temp scores. And
just to make sure that the tone, that the movie was working, that it was funny when it wanted to be funny, but it wasn't a comedy, and that it was scary when it wanted to be scary, but it wasn't mean. And then Brian comes in, and I think, you know, he creates cohesion, and that's ultimately, I think, what makes it all feel like it's just all of a single piece.
There's always a perspective I'm always curious to hear filmmakers talk about, and that is sort of that first initial, whether it's a test screening or a family and friends screening or just showing it to a few random people looking for feedback. I've spoken to a lot of people who've made tons of movies. They all say the same thing. They're never like calm during that process. It's always like, oh my God, what is going to happen? Because I think you make a movie and you hope you know the tone, you hope you understand the film, but at the end of the day, someone else is always going to tell you something about your movie you didn't realize. And so what has that experience been like for you, you know, through, I don't know how involved you were with VHS or Southbound, but, you know, obviously Ready or Not through Abigail, I imagine you had test screenings. And what has that experience been like for you, if there was something you could glean from it in general?
Well, I can tell you on Southbound, we did a Southbound screening, and I play one of the characters in Southbound, and the first note after the screening was, these two fucking clowns in the first segment, I just really hate them.
Don't like their performances.
I'm like two rows back. I'm like, oh, all right. This is going to be fun. But I think, you know, honestly, you have to prepare for that level of, it's usually not quite that personal, but you do have to prepare for that level of like, you're going to hear things that are going to suck, but you know, you have to be really honest about how you digest them, because sometimes it's just not, you don't care. You're like, that's fine. It's not that, no harm, no foul, whatever. But sometimes you go, okay, they're saying something that we feel, and that this is just proving to us that we actually do need to listen to our instincts on this and try to figure out what's broken here. And I think our biggest fear, I mean, correct me if you feel differently, but is less the experience of watching them or watching it with a test audience, which is always so nerve-wracking. And like you were saying, you just don't know what you're going to get. But it's also the data can get weaponized.
How it's interpreted. Yeah.
Yeah. And so after the fact, it can become, everybody can find the one person who agrees with them and says a thing, and you can get into these kind of endless debates that are at the end of the day
consensus.
Yeah, that are kind of silly, and you're sort of just chasing nonsense. And I think our anxiety going into test screenings is less about the actual test screening, which is a part of the process we actually find really valuable.
Yeah, and we really actually love getting the movie up in front of an audience.
Yeah, and it's really helpful because we don't need an audience to tell us half the time when something's not working. In the cards, we feel it the moment it's not working, and we'll turn to each other in the test screening and be like, oh fuck, we got to figure this out. This is not working. And, you know, being really honest with yourself is great, but it's the after the test screening part of the process that, you know, if the test screening goes really well, those notes become, well, if you like them, do them. If you don't worry about it. But if the test screening doesn't go well, it becomes very unfun very quickly.
I really enjoyed the film. I think audiences are going to have a fun time with it. I also think it's coming out at a good time. People need to have fun at the movies and just relax and watch something that makes them, you know, takes them on a ride but doesn't make them feel good, you know. And I just, as a horror fan, as a horror buff my whole life, I had a smile on my face for most of this movie. So thanks for making it.
Thank you. Really fun to be on the podcast, too.
Yeah, thanks for having us.